Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with John Lott, author of the book, The War on Guns. We've got a few more questions for him, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, back with John Lott. John, what was it that you saw that kind of pushed you into protecting the Second Amendment?
Well, it was kind of a roundabout story. I had been involved in doing a lot with crime over the years before I ever even thought about guns. I had been chief economist at the United States Sentencing Commission. I was a professor at the Wharton Business School. And I was teaching a class one day on mainly on white-collar and corporate crime, to be honest. And I made the mistake of telling the students in the class that we were ahead in the syllabus. And so a couple of the students came up to me afterwards, and they said, well, you know, since we're ahead in the syllabus, would you mind spending a little bit of time talking about gun control? And I said, well, sure, I guess I can do that. It kind of forced me to have to read through the literature at that time. I'd seen some papers in the area, but I hadn't really systematically tried to go through the literature. I just wasn't very interested in that topic. And I, at the time, my views were probably similar to, you know, somebody in the middle of the road on that issue. And I was just shocked by how poorly done the existing research was. It was very small studies, you know, 30 counties in, you know, 1 year. How do you pick 30 counties out of 3,140 counties in the United States? You know, there are just so many things. Not one of the previous studies had tried to account for the impact of law enforcement on crime rates. I mean, there were just so many bizarre things that when you're an academic, you either do research for one of two reasons. Either one, you have a new idea, which is, honest, virtually the way I did almost all my research, or you thought you could do a better job. And so, in fact, I almost stopped about six times while I was working on this, because if I was going to do it, I was going to collect all the data for all the years it was available, break it down different ways, try to account for hundreds of different factors. It's basically what turned into my book, More Guns, Less Crime. But I just hadn't been that interested in the topic. And it was just taking a lot of time to work on it. And so, but, you know, I ended up finishing it. And I was at the University of Chicago at the time, and I got a call from a reporter at USA Today named Dennis Couchon. He had gotten to know me a little bit when I was chief economist. And he had some crime questions he was asking me, and I answered them. And then finally, at the end of the conversation, he said, well, what are you working on? So I had just finished this paper, and I told him about it, and he said, well, why don't I send it to him? I said, well, okay, sure. So I sent it to him, and about a week later, there was a front-page story in USA Today. And, you know, things just kind of took off after that.
You became the expert.
I guess so. And it just, you know, but the thing is, you know, from death threats to the impact it had on my academic career, I mean, I don't want to brag, but at the time, around 2000, I was fourth in the world among economists in terms of pages published in academic peer-reviewed journals. And but it basically destroyed my academic career, to be honest, because when I was at Chicago, Mayor Daley called up Hugo Sonnenschein, who was the president of the university, and went through all the wonderful things that the city wanted to do with the university. But at the end of the conversation, as I was told, he told the president that my continued presence at the university was going to do irreparable harm.
Wow.
To the relationship between the city and the school.
You should sue him for tortious interference.
And then I went to Yale, the Yale Law School, and I had something similar happen there. I had... I was asked to testify in Hawaii for changes in their registration and licensing for guns, and I testified, and I think pretty much single-handedly stopped the changes that they were making. And both the U.S. senators from Hawaii called up the dean at the Yale Law School and complained about me there, and that made my life difficult there, too.
Are you glad you took the path you took, John?
You know, sometimes it just depends on the day. you know, at the time, I kept on convincing myself that if I didn't do this, nobody else would do it.
Well, I got to tell you, you've been up on our website, you know, since we announced the guests for the week. And I don't know if we came under attack today or what, but we have had, and we normally don't have website issues. We got shut down for a while. You know,
wow.
Some of our Coast Insiders couldn't even log in. It's bizarre. It really is strange. You never know.
Right. Well, who knows? But anyway, you know, you just do what the best you can on this stuff.
Let's go to the phones for you. You ready?
Sure.
We'll take all callers. We'll go to Walton, Pennsylvania to get things started on the wild card line. Hi, Walter. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Well, I told Mr. Danheiser I don't like to call you more than once a week, but, you know, you're talking about guns. It's like waving a red flag in front of
the door. That's all right, and I waive the limit on calls, so you don't have to worry about that.
Well, I'm an endowment member of the NRA, so, you know, I can't help myself. Why, needless to say, you know, communist China, the dictatorship, they have the most stringent gun control imaginable, and yet a couple months ago they had a lunatic run around with a knife and killed over 30 people. So it's impossible to have a, you know, to create a utopian rubber room society. It's incompatible with freedom. Anything can be used as a weapon, George, as we know.
Good point.
They had the truck, you know, and people are running cars into crowds of people. And, you know, they don't, Hillary's not advocating background checks when you go to buy gasoline in a can, you know, for your lawnmower. Well, that can be used for Molotov cocktails.
Non-democratic countries, John Lott, communist countries, most of them, I would think, if not all of them, have restrictions on gun ownership, don't they?
Right. Well, I mean, one interesting thing, after the former Soviet Union fell, researchers for a short period of time were able to go and get access to the true crime records. I mean, everything was kind of made up, you know, production of food and other things were just kind of fanciful. Well, also with the crime rates. I mean, Soviet Union used to be pictured as a place that was almost crime-free. Well, when it finally researchers could go there, they found that during the 70s and 80s and 90s, the crime rate in the former Soviet Union the murder rate was at least 50% higher and many times more than twice as high as it was in the United States. So here you had a country that essentially had banned guns from the 1920s on. You know, I had a totalitarian society. You know, law enforcement was pretty much unfettered in terms of what it was able to do in terms of spying on people. And yet, despite all that, they had a murder rate that was much higher than what we ever had during that period of time in the United States. But, you know, to answer the caller's question, I think a better comparison to make, I have one chapter in The War on Guns where I look at around the world, time after time, where guns are banned. And every single time that we have crime data, both before and after a ban, you see an increase in murder rates. There's not one time, you just think out of randomness,
every time,
you'd find that murder rates would go down. But not only do they go up, but they go up often by large amounts, just not what we've seen happen in D.C. and Chicago. You know, their gun control advocates will say, well, it really wasn't a fair experiment because people could still get guns from Maryland or Virginia or from the rest of Illinois or Indiana. That they would say you have to ban guns every place. And yet you can look around the world. Countries that have completely banned all handguns or all guns, even island nations, which you think would be the ideal experiment, have seen increases of murder rates after guns have been banned. And there's a simple reason for that, and that is when you ban guns, the most law-abiding good citizens are the ones who obey it. And even if it makes it a little bit more difficult for criminals to get it, since you're relatively disarming the law-abiding good citizens relative to the criminals, that you actually find it easier for them to commit crime.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, when I was in Mexico a couple of years ago, I felt so helpless. Almost got kidnapped. There was a national story, but that's beside the point. In terms of protecting yourself,
right,
you're not armed. There's nothing you can do. Nothing you can do. What would justices be able to do, Supreme Court justices? Would they be able to challenge the Second Amendment and interpret it their own way and say, we're not going to allow guns to be sold anymore? I mean, do they have that kind of clout?
Well, what they could do is if a law got passed that would, let's say, again ban guns in Washington, D.C., or handguns, that case would go to the Supreme Court, and they could use that to say, they can't, the Supreme Court can't ban guns, but what it can say is that these laws are constitutional. They could say that it's possible for different governments, state or local or federal, to be able to ban guns. And it's pretty clear that that's what's at stake in this election, that Hillary Clinton has promised on multiple times that she will do what she can to overturn the Heller and McDonald decisions. And those are very simple decisions. All they said was that governments could not ban all handguns or could not ban all guns. So it's not going to, if the Supreme Court overturns those decisions, and just one appointment to the Supreme Court would allow them to overturn it. But if it overturns it, then you'll have some jurisdictions, maybe like Washington, D.C., quickly pass a gun ban again, Chicago, California, your state, there are very few handguns that can still be sold legally in California because of safety regulations. Fewer and fewer of them are going to be able to legally be sold. It could be in a few years, you're not, under current law, you may not be able to go and buy a new handgun in the state.
Jeez.
And so, now, under current Supreme Court doctrine, that could be challenged at some point, and somebody would challenge it. But if the Supreme Court goes and throws out, overturns the Heller and McDonald decisions, then it wouldn't be possible to challenge that anymore.
Let's go to John in Sheridan, Wyoming, Wildcard Line. John, good morning.
Thank you, George. Another great show and another great guest, and I thank you, sir.
Sure thing.
A couple of things I wanted to bring up. First of all, with this media outrage about Donald Trump's gaffe about the Second Amendment, I'd like to ask the media in general, certainly not you because you're not part of the problem, you're part of the solution, but I'd like to ask the media, where was their outrage when Barack Obama was sending 2,500 automatic weapons to the murderous Mexican drug cartels? And where was their outrage whenever Barack Obama was sending a 50-caliber sniper rifle to El Chapo, the leaders of the most notorious, I believe, the Sinaloa drug cartel in Mexico, so they could murder innocent people on both sides of the border? And also, I'm wondering why that Hillary Clinton and Michael Bloomberg think it's all right for them to have at least 8 or 10 heavily armed bodyguards to escort them everywhere. Yet when it comes to ordinary people like you and I, they don't think that we meet the standards of the elitist, you see. So we don't deserve to be able to protect ourselves or our families or our neighbors. And this is just total hypocrisy. You know, when I hear these media liberal loonies talking about common sense gun control, I want them to give me the name of one murderer, rapist, armed robber, drug dealer, gangbanger, cop killer, or terrorist who obeys gun laws. They don't. Only law-abiding people like you and John and I obey gun laws. The criminals are lawbreakers, and lawbreakers are people who, by definition, break the law. So how can any gun law affect a criminal when they already disobey the 20,000 gun laws on the books anyway?
Right on. John, let you react. Thank you, John.
Right. Well, I mean, those are good points. I mean, look.
He's right on.
One question. What?
He's right on.
Yeah, no, I agree. One question I often ask gun control proponents when I debate them is, would you put a sign in front of your home that says that your home is a gun-free zone? And I've yet to run into one of the people that I've debated who would be willing to put up a sign like that. They know that it's not credible to the audience for them to say that they would put up a sign like that. People know that criminals would be more likely to go and, you know, attack if they don't have to worry about the victims being able to go and defend themselves. The problem, I think somehow we have to get people to think beyond their home, you know, that these guys go and have a similar type of reaction to other venues where they want to go and attack. And it's just, you know, Hillary, I'm raising that because he's mentioning Bloomberg and Hillary having armed guards to go and protect themselves. You know, in New York City, where Bloomberg was mayor, they have a few thousand people only that have concealed carry permits. You know, if you're a poor black who lives in a high crime area of New York City, there's like zero chance you're going to be able to go and get a concealed carry permit. The types of people who get it are politically powerful, well-connected people, heads of labor unions, important media people, but not even all of them get it. There's political decisions even there. My son is a producer for John Stossel at Fox News.
Okay.
Has gotten lots of death threats. He went in, tried to get a concealed handgun permit there.
Based on the death threats, right?
Right. He had like dozens of death threats that he gave them.
Some, yeah, many in writing.
Right. They were in writing. And the police looked at it and they say, well, we don't think any of these rise sufficiently to the level that you're justified to have it. There are other people that are kind of more politically favored who had no problem getting it. But the thing is, you know, in Los Angeles, you have something like 240 people in Los Angeles County out of a county of like 8 million adults that have a concealed carry permit. You have to be very politically connected to be able to go and get a permit there. Why is it that, oh, in San Francisco County in California, in years they've had either one or two permits. One person that's regularly had a permit has been the private lawyer for the sheriff in the county. You know, why is it that certain people can get those types of political favors? I'm glad that they're protected. But what about the people who are actually more likely to be victims of violent crime?
Next up, let's go to Greg in DeMont, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Well, I'm from New Jersey. I live in Europe. I came back a few years ago. A couple of years ago, a group of surgeons from Copenhagen, the main city hospital there, were visiting here in New York. And the hospital had a gunshot wound come in. And the surgeons were all amazed. They wanted to see it because they had never seen a gunshot wound in the decades that they had been surgeons. What are those countries doing that we're doing, you know? I'm saying, the other thing is, I work in Midtown Manhattan. When Trump says the Second Amendment people should take care of it, we know what that means, guys. Come on. This is the same moron that said, how come we can't use nuclear weapons? Enough of this stupidity apologizing for somebody like that. Now, to your guest, sir.
Can I answer the questions you have so far?
Well, two more questions before I get cut off. How many people were gunned down last year in this country? How many? The United States.
What do you mean by gunned down?
Shot by handgun.
Shot? What was the number? 25,000, John?
No. People who were shot to death is about 8,000.
And how many people injured, wounded?
Well, it's probably about seven times more than that.
Oh, that's terrific, huh? How many handguns are currently out in the United States? 150 million?
Both of you, hold on. We're going to hit the break. I'm going to come back with both of you. So, Greg, don't hang up. We'll come back and get you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with our special guest, John Lott. Final segment just ahead, the war on drugs. We shall be back. And welcome back to Coast, John Lott with us, his book, The War on Drugs, Greg from DuMont, New Jersey with us, and let's go back to Greg. And Greg, we got a little time for you, and I'm not going to bop you off. You only get bopped off for vulgarity, so don't worry about that.
Well, New Jersey,
can I just respond to a couple of the points that he's raised?
Yeah, we'll do the first question, then we'll go back to Greg. Go ahead, John.
Okay. First of all, the book is The War on Guns, but in any case, look, if you look across developed countries, and I have a chapter in the book on this, you find that, in fact, the countries with the highest gun ownership rates tend to have lower murder rates. There's lots of reasons why different countries have different murder rates. One thing you see is that every time a country has banned guns, its murder rates have gone up. You look at the UK. They have a low murder rate, but they had an even lower murder rate relative to the United States before they banned handguns. Before they had any gun laws, you go back to 1920 in London, a city of 8 million people, gun ownership widespread. They had a total of two gun murders. Now, in the United States, it's a little bit of a misnomer to go and talk about the U.S. murder rate. 75% of our murders are in 3% of the counties. And if you ever look at a murder map, they're very heavily concentrated in just two or three places within those counties. It's largely drug gangs that are they're involved there. And so the issue that you have here is we have a worse drug gang problem than a lot of the rest of the world has. How do you deal with that? I can think of ways to go in and deal with that, but the notion that somehow you're going to be able to go and ban guns to keep these drug gangs from getting a hold of guns is simply not credible. It's be just as effective as we've had with going and banning them from being able to sell illegal drugs.
All right, let's go back to Greg for his second question. Go ahead, Greg.
So since the millennium, according to your numbers, sir, which I think is on the low end, we've had 400,000 people murdered by guns and 2,800,000 wounded, okay, in 16 years. That's a hell of a lot more than Americans who were killed in the Second World War. How many guns are out there right now? 100 million, 150 million amongst a population of 320 million?
Well, we think it's something around 300 million or so.
300 million guns.
Right.
That's more than the total armaments that existed in the world during the Second World War to a civilian population.
Well,
this is insane. I mean, okay, I look in Manhattan. I dealt with somebody a couple weeks after the Bethel thing happened in Pennsylvania, the Sandy Hook thing happened up in Connecticut. And I had to deal with a parent whose children were murdered, all right? I didn't know what even to say to them. It was just a technological thing. I had no idea who they were. How many more of those do we need? Look at a typical newspaper in a metropolitan area.
Here's what you're missing. First of all, again, you're ignoring what's the major cause of the murders that are there. If you want to talk about dealing with drug gangs, fine. We should talk about that. But what you're focusing on is only on the bad things that happen and not on the many, many more times that people's lives are protected and saved because they're able to go and defend themselves.
Well,
you may not see those people come into emergency rooms because they're able to go and protect themselves. You know, it's, I guess I just don't understand why you're not directly responding to my questions that I was pointing out. Again, if you look across the developed countries, why is it that developed countries that have more guns tend to have lower murder rates? Why is it that every time guns have been banned, murder rates go up?
Well, your University of Chicago, in the late 70s, 90% of your business school kids were said to not believe that people were deserving of pensions and health insurance. So I really have to question your numbers in general, so I can't help it.
That's right, or what it has to do with anything.
Just to general, Chicago, Milton Friedman, all the business stuff.
500 million
guns. How many AK-47s are out there?
Pennsylvania, Yale. So I was at Chicago for a while.
With the data, John, how many of these homicides that have occurred in this nation each year are done with illegal ownership of guns?
The vast majority of them. Look, 90% of adult murderers and 89% of juvenile murderers have violent criminal records. It's illegal for them to own guns.
Yet they've got them.
Yet they've got them. That's exactly right.
How do they get them?
Well, they get it the same way they get the illegal drugs, and they would get them the same way they get the illegal drugs even if you banned the guns.
See, there's a business out there for illegal gun sales, isn't there?
Right. Look, if tomorrow you banned all, or you actually could get all illegal drugs out of the country and all guns, how long do you think it would be before the illegal drugs started coming back in?
Huh.
How long do you think it would be before they brought in the guns to protect that valuable property?
About an hour later.
Right. And the thing is, it's not like these gangs can go and call up the police someplace and ask them to help get their drugs back if another gang steals their drugs. They have to set up their own military to go and try to do it. You have to deal with why we have a worse drug gang problem. Now, we can talk about legalization of drugs or whatever. I think that would dramatically reduce it.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm a proponent of that. All drugs. Just make it legal, and you don't wipe out the cartels that way.
Right, but Greg has to deal with these questions. He has to explain why every time we ban guns, it gets worse. More deaths occur. Why is it when we look across developed countries, you see the ones with more gun ownership tend to have lower murder rates?
Let's go back to Greg for his final comments before we move on. Greg, anything else?
Well, why is it that when I lived in Europe and Berlin and a couple other places, I sure felt really safe, and I come back to the United States and work all around the country for a couple of years, and that's because there's so many guns out there. What you're not saying, sir, I'm sorry if I was deprecating you,
70% of the counties in the United States have zero murders in any given year.
But guns going off where some kids get shot by accident, somebody discharges a gun by accident, somebody in a rage shoots a relative, because there's so many guns out there that are handy. Look, I mean, I still have my dad's .45 from the Second World War, okay? I still have that with a couple of rounds. It's a memento thing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'll give you an example of the bias in media coverage. You know, President Obama has frequently said the United States is unique in terms of mass public shootings. Do you know that during Obama's presidency, the casualty rate for mass public shootings in the European Union is 50% higher than the casualty rate for mass public shootings in the United States?
Yeah, exactly. And I got to tell you, if I lived in Paris right now, John, I'd want to be carrying.
I would think so. I mean, what's the alternative? There's no way that the 11,000 police or military that they have on the street in Paris can protect everybody.
You know, in terms of poor innocent kids killing their little two-year-old brothers, stupidity on the parents' part, those guns should be locked up.
Look, every point that Greg's raised, I have a chapter in the book, The War on Guns.
Guns. I may have said the war on drugs. It's the war.
Maybe you were thinking ahead to what my answer was.
Yeah, exactly.
But, but too often, you know, I hear this general comparison, comparing London or, you know, some country in Europe to the United States, and they say they have stricter gun control laws, and they say that must be the reason why they have fewer murders. Well, my point would be, if you look in each of those places, before they had the gun control laws, they had even lower murder rates. It's still lower than the United States. There's lots of reasons why different places, you know, drug gang problems, cultural differences, lots of reasons why murder rates vary. The question is, once you try to account for that, what happens in those countries when they change their gun laws? I notice he doesn't mention Switzerland. Switzerland has a higher gun possession rate than we have here in the United States.
Don't they compel people to have guns?
Well, they had up until recently. It's one of the things George Soros spent literally tens of millions of dollars on trying to change, and they recently changed it. But up until a few years ago, basically all able-bodied males between the ages of 18 and 42 were mandated to keep a machine gun in their home that was issued to them by the government. But even beyond that, they have a very high gun ownership rate. They have, in half the cantons in Switzerland, you can carry without even having to have a permit to carry. The other half of the cantons are kind of like a right-to-carry state where you have to apply for a permit, but then it's pretty much automatically granted. So they have very liberal laws. But, you know, it's...
They should ban all video games, John. That's what they should do.
Right. There's so many claims that are made out there that, these mass public shootings are just one, these comparisons across countries.
All right, go ahead, John. Wrap up and we'll take some more calls.
We'll take another call.
Carlos in Carson, California. Hey, Carlos, welcome to the show.
Yes, well, good evening. Well, listen, in Rwanda, they macheted 700,000 people to death. In Cambodia, they killed... Paul Pot killed about 2 million people. Idi Amin killed hundreds of thousands in Uganda, and they had just confiscated guns prior to the genocides, okay? So that's what the elite want. They want to take our guns away so they can have massive genocide here with us. They're going to have a picnic. They're going to use us as blood rituals to their satanic gods. Now, think about this. When the racial revolution breaks out in a few years, which will break out, there's going to be massive vandalism. Greg, gullible Greg, if he gives up his gun, they're going to come. The vandals are going to come knocking right at his door and take whatever he has. We need guns to protect ourselves, not so much from the government, but from the vandalism that's going to ensue once we have these revolutions that are being hyped by the communists. It's going to happen, people. You got to keep your guns. Don't be so gullible.
Well, there you go. There's a supporter for you, John.
Right. I'll make one comment, and that is, in the war on guns, I also make comparison across countries in terms of deaths from mass bombings. And you have countries like Russia, for example, where they have per capita deaths from bombings, terrorist bombings, that are like three times greater than the deaths that we have from mass public shootings in the United States. So, I mean, he's right that there's lots of different ways that people can go and do this. We've had relatively few bombings. I mean, obviously, we've had like the Oklahoma City bombing and the Boston Marathon bombing and a few other ones, but they're very rare compared to what they are in most other countries. But, you know, even if you look at mass public shootings, the United States is not only low compared to the European Union, but even much lower compared to the rest of the world. You know, it's we make about 4.6% of the world population, but we make up only about 4.2% of the deaths from mass public shootings around the world.
Are you totally opposed to background checks?
No. What I try to say before is that there are few simple fixes that I think any reasonable person would agree to. I mentioned the fact that who pays for them? It should be everybody who pays for them. If you really believe crime rates are going to go down, I don't. But I know people feel better if they're background checked. But pay for it out of general revenue. Don't put the whole tax on the gun buyer, particularly on poor gun buyers. The second thing to do is fix it. There's no reason in the world that 99% of the people who are stopped are false positives. And it's even worse than that, because the people who overwhelmingly get stopped are blacks and Hispanics. Look, here's the deal. People tend to have names similar to others in their racial groups, Asians similar to other Asians, Hispanics similar to other
Hispanics. And it gets mixed up, doesn't it?
Well, the problem is 30% of black males in the United States, for example, are legally forbidden from being able to own guns because of their criminal history. Who are they most likely to create false positives for? Law-abiding, good black males who want to have a gun to protect themselves and their family. Hispanics have the second highest false positive rate. And so the thing is, you got to fix those things. There's no, and the problem's even worse under Obama. One of the things I go through in the book is just to point out that under Clinton or Bush, they at least had people that would go and check. And it may be a year or so, but eventually, in most cases, the government would come back and say, look, we made a mistake. You're cleared now to go and buy a gun. Obama has pulled every single person off of doing that double checking. There's no one now doing that double checking. Now, you can go and appeal, but most people aren't capable of going through the paperwork.
No, and they don't want to wait a year. If they wait a year, they just forget about it.
Well, and the thing is, it costs thousands of dollars to hire a lawyer. That may not stop you or I, George, from getting a gun, but the very people who need it the most, poor blacks, not only are they being tagged falsely at much higher rates, but then they have to go and pay thousands of dollars to get it fixed. There's no reason why that should be the case. If you merely made the federal government have to have the same rules for background checks that the federal government requires for private companies, you could solve that problem. And then the third thing is basically concerns about registration. We just had a week ago, the Obama administration was caught yet again keeping records on gun purchasers that they're legally forbidden from keeping. The concern that people have is that if you go and have background checks on all private transfers as well as new gun sales, then you know, 6-7 years from now, President Hillary Clinton could go to the gun dealers that have these 4473 forms, the forms you have to fill out to buy a gun, and say, copy them, send them to the federal government, and you have an instant national registry of law-abiding gun owners. There's ways you can deal with that. You can handle it the same way we deal with the federal government not being able to keep records. But if you dealt with those three things, you could. I would be perfectly happy with the background check system. The thing is, I think those are all reasonable changes. Who pays for it? Fixing it so you don't get the wrong people stopped. I mean, who can argue against that? If the rules are good enough for private companies to have to follow, why not make the federal government have to follow it? And the thing is, when you bring that up, though, the gun control advocates go nuts, particularly on this thing about who pays for it. They want it so that poor people have to go and pay for this. As I mentioned in Colorado, I have a discussion in the book about both Colorado and Maryland and how those laws got passed there. And so, you know, it seems to me they're more concerned with laws that make it difficult for people, particularly poor minorities, to get guns than they are concerned with getting the background check system passed. Because if they made those three changes, I guarantee you there'd be no opposition to getting those laws passed.
All right, my friend, I want to thank you for being on the program. Let's stay in touch and get your reaction to events as they always occur, John, okay?
No, I really appreciate you having me on. I think this book, The War on Guns, is the most important book that I've written on guns.
Well, and you've written some great ones, too.
Well, thank you very much.
The War on Guns by John Lott. His website, the Blogspot, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, couple hours of open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.